from store boy to millionaire. But I'm only 19 years old, Mr. Riggs. And the speaker looked questioningly into the eyes of his companion, as if he doubted his seriousness in asking him to become a partner in his business. Mr. Riggs was not joking, however, and he met George Peabody's perplexed gaze smilingly as he replied, "That is no objection. If you are willing to go in with me and put your labor against my capital, I shall be well satisfied." This was the turning point in a life which was to leave its impress on two of the world's greatest nations. And what were the experiences that led to it? They were utterly commonplace, and in some respects just as fall to the lot of many country boys today. At 11, the lad was obliged to earn his own living. At that time, 1806, his native town, Danvers, Massachusetts, presented few opportunities to the ambitious. He took the best that offered, a position as store boy in the village grocers. 4 years of faithful work and constant effort at self-culture followed. He was now 15. His ambition was growing. He must seek a wider field. Another year passed, and then came the longed-for opening. Joyfully, the youth set out for his brother's store in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Here he felt he would have a better chance. But disappointment and disaster were lurking round the corner. Soon after he had taken up his new duties, the store was burned to the ground. In the meantime, his father had died, and his mother, whom he idolized, needed his help more than ever. Penniless and out of work, but not disheartened, he immediately looked about for another position. Gladly he accepted an offer to work in his uncle's dry goods store in Georgetown, D.C., and here we find him 2 years later, at the time when Mr. Riggs made his flattering proposition. Did influence, a pull, or financial considerations have anything to do with the merchant's choice of a partner? Nothing whatever. The young man had no money and no pull save what his character had made for him. His agreeable personality had won him many friends, and his uncle much additional trade. His business qualities had gained him an enviable reputation. His tact, says Sarah K. Bolton, was unusual. He never wounded the feelings of a buyer of goods, never tried him with unnecessary talk, never seemed impatient, and was punctual to the minute. That Mr. Riggs had made no mistake in choosing his partner, the rapid growth of his business conclusively proved. About a year after the partnership had been formed, the firm moved to Baltimore. So well did the business flourish in Baltimore that within 7 years the partners had established branch houses in New York and Philadelphia. Finally, Mr. Riggs decided to retire, and Peabody, who was then but 35, found himself at the head of the business. London, which he had visited several times, now attracted him. It offered great possibilities for banking. He went there, studied finance, established a banking business, and thenceforth made London his headquarters. Wealth began to pour in upon him in a golden stream, but although he had worked steadily for this, it was not for personal ends. He never married, and to the end lived simply and unostentatiously. Through the long years of patient work, a great purpose had been shaping his life. Daily he had prayed that God might give him means wherewith to help his fellow men. His prayer was being answered in overflowing measure. Business interests constrained him to spend the latter half of his life in London, but absence only deepened his love for his own country. All that great wealth could do to advance the welfare and prestige of the United States was done by the millionaire philanthropist. But above all else, he tried to bring within the reach of poor children that which was denied himself, a school education. The Peabody Institute in his native town, with its free library and free course of lectures, the Institute, Academy of Music and Art Gallery of Baltimore, the Museum of Natural History at Yale University, the Museum of Archaeology and Ethnology at Harvard University, the Peabody Academy of Science at Salem, Massachusetts, besides large contributions every year to libraries and other educational and philanthropic institutions all over the country, bear witness to his love for humanity. Surpassing all this, however, was his establishment of the Peabody Fund of $3 million for the education of the freed slaves of the South and for the equally needy poor of the white race. An equal amount had been previously devoted to the better housing of the London poor, a dream almost too good to come true, it seemed, to the toilers in the great city slums, when they found their filthy, unhealthy tenements replaced by clean, wholesome dwellings, well supplied with air and sunlight and all modern conveniences and comforts. London presented its generous benefactor with the freedom of the city. A bronze statue was erected in his honor, and Queen Victoria, who would fain have loaded him with titles and honors, all of which he respectfully declined, declared his act to be wholly without parallel. A beautiful miniature portrait of Her Majesty, which she caused to be specially made for him, and a letter written by her own hand, were the only gifts he would accept. Gloriously had his great purpose been fulfilled. He who began life as a poor boy had given to the furtherance of education and for the benefit of the poor in various ways the sum of $9 million. The remaining $4 million of his fortune was divided among his relatives. England loved and honored him even as his own country did, and when he died in London, November 4, 1869, she offered him a resting place among her immortals in Westminster Abbey. His last wish, however, was fulfilled, and he was laid beside his mother in his native land. His legacies to humanity are doing their splendid work today as they have done in the past, and as they will continue to do in the future, enabling multitudes of aspiring souls to reach heights which but for him they never could have attained. These words of his, too, spoken on the occasion of the dedication of his gift to Danvers, its free institute, will serve for ages as a bugle call to all youths who are anxious to make the most of themselves, and like him, to give of their best to the world. Though Providence has granted me an unvaried and unusual success in the pursuit of fortune in other lands, he said, I am still in heart the humble boy who left yonder unpretending dwelling many, very many years ago. There is not a youth within the sound of my voice whose early opportunities and advantages are not very much greater than were my own, and I have since achieved nothing that is impossible to the most humble boy among you. Bear in mind that to be truly great, it is not necessary that you should gain wealth and importance. Steadfast and undeviating truth, fearless and straightforward integrity, and an honor ever unsullied by an unworthy word or action, make their possessor greater than worldly success or prosperity. These qualities constitute greatness.